Welcome to The Age Stage in this, the fourth episode of the series. My name is Vicky Barber, and as always, behind the controls, we have Brody Guzet.
Uru.
Hey, Brody.
Are you well?
I am very well, and yourself?
Good week.
Very good week. Always a good week.
I sold my boat.
Oh, did you?
I did.
What sort of boat was it?
It was an aluminium tinny. It wasn't actually mine.
A dinghy.
Yeah, it belonged to a man who passed away who left it to my children who never did anything with it, so it ended up with me. But it was a very cute boat. It's made by de Havilland, so it's got a lot of history. Aeroplane company.
Oh, right. So was it very stylish?
In a tinny sort of way. So what have we got on the show today?
Well, this week our theme continues to look at the complex issue of funding life in a retirement village. And we have with us Kim Ashcroft. And the always impressive Tom Camp.
Always impressive.
They're going to take us through the options available to those seeking a village lifestyle. Then we'll move on to health with our friend Damien.
Yep.
And his take on ailments and what we can do about ailments when we get to the far side of 60. So that's something for me to look forward to, I suppose.
Not really.
And then we have Chris from Mornington Telstra, who this week's going to explore the benefits of tablets.
Right.
Not the medical ones, but the ones we carry about.
You cheated then, didn't
you? I did. I actually call them a phablet, which is a phone tablet. Oh, I'm going to ask him whether that's a term. And, of course, then an old comrade of yours, Noel Watson.
Yeah, well, he is. We've done a recording for him, so he's recording after the event. But he'll be popping in at the back for 5 minutes. He's going to be talking about electric cars and hybrids and how they affect us. And whether we should be looking at them, or are they, really all the value that they're supposed to be?
Oh, well, that'll be interesting.
Now, with that, we've got the guests in today, but we always have to get their special piece of music.
So. We do. It helps get them in the mood.
It does. So without further ado, let's get into that mood right now.
Welcome, Kim and Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming along. Now, Kim, you've stepped in for Stuart this week.
Yes. Stuart's busy today, so he sent me along.
Oh, well, it's nice to have you on board. Always nice to have another female in the studio.
Will you be here
next week?
It is
impressive,
as well?
Isn't it?
I can be.
Oh, good. There you go. Is that right? It's impressive.
It's very impressive to have two women in the studio. It's a majority, I think, Brody.
It's good. It's good for a change. Now, we wanted to talk a little bit about retirement villages and aged care and nursing homes. Like, they're terms that we sort of throw together in one big lump, and we're hoping that you can clarify for our listeners and us a little bit about the differences. So if we're looking at retirement village, what do they provide versus if I was looking at a nursing home or something like that?
Well, Kim's the expert. But look, it is important to make a note. A lot of people have a preconception or a conception out there that a retirement village, for example, is an aged care village, and it absolutely isn't.
They're not connected at all.
They're not connected at all, and they provide a totally different set of services.
So they don't have, one section is this and one section is that. They are very separate entities usually. Yes.
They absolutely can be. The same operator like we have at the village, we have aged care on site as well as retirement village, but they are completely separately run. The retirement village side is state regulated, and retirement villages differ in each state for the regulations. The aged care side, which is what people used to call nursing homes, is federally regulated, very highly regulated. The license as to who can operate those is controlled by the government. Who can enter as residents is controlled by the government. Everything around a nursing home, there's very tight rules and regulations, whereas retirement villages, it's state-run. It's a more lifestyle choice, and they are quite different, even though the same operator can have both on the same piece of land.
Okay.
Yeah, for example, our villages, we don't embrace and engage an aged care facility. We certainly coordinate with the community care and the external services that come into the village, because that's pretty practical.
But you would have some sort of relationship with aged care, because they would turn to you and say, "Mum's really unwell, what do we do now?" wouldn't they?
Brodie, you're dead right. We do have relationships. But as Kim's pointed out, you know, the regulation and the way in which aged care are run and the way beds are allocated, you can't actually guarantee that you've got a bed for a person. And I think I shared a couple of weeks ago, 50% of the people that would be in my village that would have to go to an aged care facility, which is very few, they often have to relocate to where the children are. So it's actually way outside of our district, particularly in regional Victoria. So,
because yours is about lifestyle choice, and then when it comes to healthcare, it's more about being close to family. Is that the paradigm?
Yeah. Yeah, the paradigm. And regional Victoria is a lot different from city living as well. Look, Kim's she's really cool on this on the aged care thing, so we need to talk about that because I think people need to understand the difference between the regulation and people need to understand the difference between the finance arrangements as well.
Okay.
Yeah, because the finances are very different, aren't they?
They are very different. To move into an aged care home, a nursing home, you need two pieces of paper. One is a healthcare assessment that you get from an ACAT team, aged care assessment team. They'll come do an assessment and work out, do you actually need the level of healthcare that's provided in a nursing home? And if the answer is yes, that gives you part of the ticket to go. But the other half of the equation is a financial assessment where you have to go and have a combined income and assets test by Centrelink or Department of Veterans Affairs that determines how much aged care is going to cost you.
And once determines how much myself as an individual is going to pay versus subsidy, or is that what you're implying?
In aged care, there's actually four fees that people pay. The first fee is called a basic daily fee that every single person in an aged care home pays regardless of whether they've got just a pension and nothing else or whether they're a multi-millionaire. Everyone pays the basic daily care fee, which is set at 85% of the pension.
Right.
Then on top of that, there's what's called a means-tested care fee, which is an assessment based on your income and assets as to whether you can pay any of the healthcare costs yourself. And if the department determines that you can pay $50 of the healthcare costs a day yourself, the subsidy that the facility would otherwise receive from the government is reduced by $50.
So and you yourself have to pay.
And you yourself have to pay that. There's a third fee called an extra services fee that not all homes have, but some do. And that's to cover things like Foxtel and hairdressing and special meals and those sorts of things that are above and beyond the ordinary level of service. Some homes package them up and have it as an extra service fee. And then the fourth payment is the big one that everyone wants to know about, and that's the accommodation payment. And that's what we used to call a bond.
Okay.
But these days it's called a RAD or a DAP or a RAC or a DAC.
I've noticed there are quite a few acronyms.
Pretty radical around here.
Yes. It's got to be a New Zealand word.
Oh, come on. Definitely not. Only Australians can make acronyms like that.
And basically that the accommodation payment, you'll fall into one of three categories. If you're a pensioner and you have under about $46,000 in assets, the government's going to pay all of your accommodation costs.
Right.
If you're someone who is of low or modest means, so you've still got a pension and you've got about under $170,000 in assets, the government and yourself will make co-payments based on a sliding scale. And then if you fall into the category where the government determine you can pay all of your accommodation costs, that's where you're responsible for paying the RAD or the bond or whatever you'd like to call it. And even then, you don't have to pay it as a lump sum.
It can be a payment plan type thing.
You can do it as a lump sum. You can do it as an interest equivalent of what that lump sum would have accrued with a government mandated interest rate, or you can pay a combination of both.
Right.
So it is quite complicated, and this is one of the areas where financial advisors can really come into their own and really benefit people that are moving into aged care.
Is the home taken as an asset?
That's not a simple question anymore. It used to be no.
Right.
Now, if there's a protected person still in the home, for example, one spouse moves into care and the other one stays in the home, the home's protected. Or if there's a dependent child still in the home. But there's been a lot of changes to the Act in the last few years. So for someone where there's no one protected left in the home, It's only protected in certain circumstances if you're going to rent it out, and then there's time limits on that. And it is extremely complex, and the value of the home is actually capped. So again, it's something that a financial advisor Absolutely. Really needs to sit down and talk to someone about. Mm. But the important thing about financial advice is you need to get that before you complete the income and assets assessment.
And your medical from...
Yeah, the medical, you can get organised through your local doctor.
Yes.
But the combined income and assets assessment, you really need financial advice before you send that to Centrelink. Because if you fill it out wrong and send it to Centrelink and they think you've got more assets than you don't than you do have, it can be very hard to actually undo
to
that.
To then retrospectively amend it.
And there are some things you can do to move your assets around, like prepaying a funeral or gifting, that can move you between those three categories I talked about, and that can make a big difference to the cost of care for you.
So to summarise that, two people in a retirement village, even and if and that's an asset, they've paid for the building.
Yes.
One gets sick, one needs to have a medical assessment and a financial assessment. That's worked out, and there you go. It doesn't affect the missus that's been left in the until she's turned become sick.
Yes. Correct.
So that level has continued to be protected. But what happens though, in because you have rental, don't you?
Yes.
I would have been paying rent. So I've now got some money in the bank, which I use to pay the rent. Now, I go to the hospital thing, care, but my wife needs to be continued, her rent needs to be continued to be paid. Will they look at the asset and say, well, we've got to take a certain amount of that money and leave it for that purpose?
Yes, when they do the assets assessment, they will split assets 50-50 down the middle, regardless of whose name they are on paper, they're considered...
Yep.
The combined assets of the couple, and that will be split down the middle. And the other thing that happens is when one partner moves into aged care, you go from a couple's pension down to single separated by illness pensions. So there is a slight increase in the overall amount.
Sure, but if I've been paying $500 a week to stay at your place, I don't suddenly pay $250 a week because there's only one of you.
You still pay your full fees.
But they would allow for that. They will account for that, manage to know that money can still going to need to be paid for, because working on that principle, I wouldn't rent because they would take potentially her money as well as my money.
The reality is, Brody, is that whether you're living in a rental village or a traditional retirement village, or if you're living in the community renting a property, you're in the same boat.
Yes.
So I think what Kim's alerting you to is it's very important. Trish, I think, Hill last week really touched on this. Very, very important to have a financial assessment done so that you are aware and proactive about what your circumstance may be if you find yourself in a situation either because of a health need or an accident, what we call the Molly Meldrum syndrome.
Yes.
You know, so many people are unprepared and have not done the financial assessment that when a health issue does occur, they're getting released from hospital and supposed to go to respite or looking for a long-term place of residence in a home or whatever, they haven't had this ACAT assessment done.
So you can get that assessment done on your own volition at any time.
And
what age can, would you...
But you need to have it done where it's reflective of your care need.
Correct.
So if you're 70, healthy, driving, I wouldn't have one done because all the assessment's going to show is that you don't have a care need.
Right.
But if you're 80 and you've got osteoarthritis and you're struggling to sort of get around and someone has to drive you and you can't really shower anymore, someone has to come and help you do the cleaning, that's when you get an assessment done that shows that you've got these care needs growing, but you're not quite there yet, so it's not an urgent assessment, and then you can help to prepare and have a look at some homes and decide and have those conversations about, do I want to move closer to the kids or do I want to stay where I've lived for the last 50 years?
Right.
Absolutely, and often a person that's in a retirement village that enters a retirement village is not in that situation.
No.
They haven't got the health issues, they haven't got the slowing down, the rigors, challenges of getting old. And then all of a sudden that does start to happen. If they're in a supportive environment, a good environment where the management is proactive, then that's when we encourage family to come in and start talking to mum or dad about the potential challenges and what they can do and how they can do it.
Right.
And if necessary, coordinate external care. And then if it does happen that they have to move into a fully fledged aged care facility, then we've been proactive to make sure mum or dad's been assessed properly.
So just on the basis that when somebody has been left on their own for whatever reason, there is a propensity they may be able to drive and all the rest of it, but they're just not feeding themselves and looking after themselves. Is that an opportunity to have an assessment done?
It is. There's lots of, not just nursing home options, but there's lots of other aged care options.
Right.
There's community care, veterans home support programs. Even if you've had a short stay in hospital, there's post-acute care programs that can all lead into aged care packages, which again help support you in your home until you actually need that 24-hour round-the-clock care that people in nursing homes or aged care homes need.
Right.
Mm. So all the information's out there, and there's expertise.
Yeah, yeah.
Village operators such as Stewart's Village and Kim, and our villages, we can direct people as required.
And is I was going to say, is that a good starting point? It's, you know, I wouldn't know where to start. Is it good idea just to go to a local village?
Absolutely.
And sort of say, we're in this situation.
This is
where I'm at. Can I speak to someone for assistance? And then...
Absolutely.
Take it from there.
The other place you can go is the government have created a website called myagecare.gov.au.
Right.
And that's a really good starting point for if you're looking at aged care options. It doesn't cover retirement living, but it covers
aged care.
So that's nursing home, in-home care at home, in the community care. It covers even simple things like if you need domestic support at home and you're older, and you could, there's little basic fee calculators on
there. Okay, and the website again was?
myagecare.gov.au.
Okay, and you've used the term aged care and nursing home.
I use them interchangeably.
Are they the same?
Aged care is like an umbrella term that covers residential aged care, which is what we used to call nursing homes, as well as community-based aged care, which are care packages and other things that can come into your home.
And I'm the individual still living in my home, but services are coming and visiting me on a daily basis or whatever's needed.
Will you run seminars at your own places from time to time for these?
Excellent question, Brodie. Most well-established retirement village aged care operators, they usually have what we call session 101s. You know,
right.
So that you can actually assess the living choice options that you actually have. And whilst we're discussing aged care and or retirement at the moment, there's three or four other categories like lifestyle, land lease arrangements and so on, which I'm sure we'll cover on this program as we go forward. Mm. But the key is again, if you're trying to be proactive, Kim's Village, Stu's Village, Village Baxter, Peter Nelson's and our Encore Living group, we're always running regular sessions
where people can come in and
explore the options they have. And the idea of exploring those options, at least they know where to go or there's a point of contact. We do try and connect them with professionals, particularly financial planners, to make sure that if there is an acute situation, that they've got a point of contact where they can sit down, do the financial assessments that need to be done, health assessments and so on, so that they can be looked after. You can imagine the trauma of having to deal with just the accident or something, let alone worrying about the money and what
comes
goes
next.
On,
yes, you know? Of course.
Well, I think this has been a really great session.
It's a ripper session. We've got Kim, that's why.
It's been good. Thank you.
We better get her.
She's impressive. She's impressive.
No. Impressive is the word of the day.
An SME, subject matter expert.
That's right.
So thanks, guys, for being here today. We really appreciate it. Every week we appreciate your time here. As the story unfolds, it just gets better and better. So that was great fun. It's your turn to select some music.
Yes. Well, I've been in a 60s time zone, so now we're heading to the 70s. And so our first tune is one to take us back to... picturing you in flared jeans and with long sideburns here, Brody, in the 70s with Chicago Old Days. And you're with The Age Stage. Welcome back. And our next guest is Damien. Welcome aboard.
Oh, good afternoon, guys.
How are you?
Are you well?
I'm extremely well.
But you're looking looking incredibly fit.
I try where I can. You're very kind, but I guess the warmer weather makes us all glow a little
bit
further.
It does, because we've taken off those big jackets, haven't we?
Stripping down to lesser clothes always looks pretty. Always looks prettier.
It does.
Now, we've been talking about healthcare assessments before you, and that was all about the theory. This is what you need, one of those. What does it mean from a medical point of view?
Well, look, generally in aged care assessment, it's about identifying what your physical, your mental and your biological needs really are. So you tend to get a bit of social work involvement for your financial and your home access needs. You get an occupational therapist to identify, is there any limitations of your current accommodation as opposed to your future accommodation and your needs involved in that space. And then you also get the medical one that sort of says what your biometrics are, all your numbers and all your spaces.
So do you start with a GP visit, or what's usually your first step if you're getting one of these assessments? Or is it due to the fact that you have been in hospital and you've had an ailment or an injury that's impacted you?
Look, there's multiple assessment needs and trigger points for people at any point in their healthcare cycles, whether they be 40 or 60 or 90. Mm-hmm. So everyone's got a different level of functioning or coping. Unfortunately, it tends to be a bit of a trigger event. You've had a medical emergency, you might have fractured your hip, you might have had some kidney trouble, or some sort of hospitalization that's triggered that review of what your capacity is to cope at home. And that's a very dangerous word to use in hospital languages, because no one likes to feel like they're not coping well. And yes, everyone puts these barriers up to living in retirement villages and nursing homes and the like. But I can say honestly and fairly that the accommodation needs in the community have risen greatly. We've got a lot of nurses that potentially visit you at home, and the ancillary services that are available really do open up the availability of people to maintain their level of functioning at home. But we all need help, and it's about identifying what they are. Right. To answer your question, GPs is normally the first and the best point of call, because if you're not getting to see a GP twice a year, as we've said many times before, it's about maintaining a good relationship that maintains and gives you access to all the resources to make sure you're living the way you want to live.
Mm, that's great, because they're aware of what those services are or who to put you in contact with, etc.
Well, they might start that conversation earlier in the piece, Vic, and that makes it a bit easier for you, because the transition from being completely independent to being completely not independent.
And no one wants to face that, do they?
And no one wants to face that sort of grief. As we've said, the mental health issues are huge, let alone the dependency. You've been independent for 20, 30, 50, 100 years perhaps, and you don't want to give that up just easily.
No, you don't. Now, when you are retired, if we're talking about, you know, those in the retirement life, you no longer have an excuse that, you know, you can't exercise, do you? Because, you know, they say you've got more time. So what are some of the great forms of exercise? And at that time, should I be looking at something brand new, or should I be going back to something I used to do? I mean, I realise our bodies are different as we get older, and how should we get into that sort of exercise routine?
Well, look, there's plenty of physiotherapists, there's plenty of gym and personal instructors that are really engaging with people now in their age to sort of work out, well, what is functionally appropriate? And as young people, we tend to do what we call kettle exercises, which is lifting a huge weight in particular ways.
Oh, a kettlebell.
A kettlebell.
Oh, yes, I know the kettlebell.
You're familiar with the kettlebell, but you know, as a more mature person in the audience, actually a tea bag exercise or a tea kettle exercise is just as valuable.
What is that?
Well, it's identical to the kettlebell, but just a bit smaller. It's about weight resistance and weight training. It's understanding what your body's limitations are physically and making sure you participate in it regularly.
I'm not sure that I get a great deal of aerobic quality from lifting a tea bag.
Teabag, maybe not so, but if you're 90 and a teabag can be enough weight, it's actually the movement. We had a great campaign in the 80s of Norm, Life Be In It.
Yes.
Just get off your bum and get into life. And it doesn't change just because you get older, but we make more excuses and we can become more eloquent in that stage of life to say, oh, maybe not today. But the reality is, if you're not moving every second day for 30 minutes, enough for you to crack enough sweat, to crack a small brow, or crack a sweat over your brow even, that's important for you. So I say we talk about kettlebells in gyms, but gyms are friendly for old people as well. Resistance is the key.
So it's resistance type of workout and going to your level. So are there personal trainers out there that would specialise in older clientele? I'm unsure.
Well, there are absolutely specialists in aged care, but the reality is it's not just aged care. It's working within your limitations. Even as a young, fit 30, 40-year-old, we've all got limitations. Our bodies get a bit older.
That's true.
We identify a few more weaknesses than we used to have at our 20s. And as you get older, I guess there are more limitations. But that's just finding the right exercise that suits you to do your maximum effort.
Right, right. And again, is it good to start something new?
Absolutely.
Right.
We keep saying you've got to do something new that you haven't done before. It gets harder as you get older, but that's no excuse.
Oh. Sport?
Absolutely. Why not?
No, well, I'm splattering because I don't do any other than which is a shame. But golf and things like that, anything, walking, tennis, just about anything. It's aquarobics, all of that.
I was saying to my daughter only earlier today that if you're not having a good laugh at yourself at least once a week, there's something wrong. And laughing is a great exercise. But people tend to hold them back, hold themselves back. Listening to Audible PFM is a great way. And get on a walking, get on a treadmill, maybe even get on an exercise bike.
And what about a Fitbit? Do you think they're really worth...
We've talked a lot about Fitbits. They're fantastic tools if they motivate you to get up and get involved in your life. They're not always accurate, but that's not the point. The point is about being engaged and start having some healthy competition with your colleagues, your friends, your family, and motivate each other. When you get a Fitbit group together, and I'm not just brand specific, there's Garmin and Allstax out there.
Yes.
But when you get a group of people together that can motivate each other to try a little bit harder every other day, I think that's a benefit. So I love them. They have actually found some interesting stuff. Even in our local community, we've had people turn up to the heart department and find out, oh, hang on a second, you've had a little blip along there. And so it does trigger more investigation and more reporting and can save a life. So I'm not going to say they're useless, but they've got limitations.
Yes.
Just like getting out and going for a walk, as the weather gets warmer, walking can be a hazard to most people. Tripping, falling, especially as we get older, are challenges. Mm-hmm. Maybe walking on the beach. If you're going to fall or trip, that's a bit easier. You land softer.
Into the sand.
Walking in water is a tremendous resistance exercise that people are going to be able to start taking on in the summer, and increasing that muscle strength, which is what it's about. Resistance against your muscles.
So even walking along in knee-deep or... So water is of benefit to us all, Damien?
Absolutely. The footballers do it, so why shouldn't you at 90 get out there?
Well, I did try... aquarobics once. I'm opening my way up my soul here, and I turned up and there was 40 women and yes. me.
So I'm not seeing the issue there, Brody.
Well, I got in the water and they were all going sort of clapping and things, and they all kept looking at me and smiling.
They were impressed you had joined them.
No, they weren't. They were husband hunting.
Oh. It is a dangerous sport.
I moved right up to the other end of the pool, and eventually I thought, this isn't for me.
You can be endangered in those sporting environments, and I'm told as you get older, there's a lot more to look at. So perhaps, Rody, that is the sport of you, the sport you can choose.
Damien, you're an absolute star. We love having you. We love having you in here. You're so exciting when it comes to medical matters. You make anything sound possible. And if that's coming from me, that's saying something.
I look forward to seeing you down the beach in the aquaerobics class.
Maybe
just walking in the sand.
And they'll wave back at you too.
So thanks, buddy. We greatly appreciate
Pleasure.
Now on to our second piece of music.
Our second piece of music, yes. So four brothers who then had the idea of bringing in their younger brother to become the Jackson 5. And that's when their career took off. So it's Jackie, Tito, Jermaine, Marlon, and of course, Michael, and Dancing Machine. That music can only mean one thing. We have Chris from the Telstra Mornington store. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me back again.
Good to see you, buddy. You nice sound healthy. You.
Yes, so I am healthy now. A lot healthier than I was last time.
Oh, well, that's thank good.
You. Back
that's
in the saddle.
Now, today, Chris, we wanted to talk about tablets. Now,
yes.
Not the sort you take from the doctor or from the pharmacy. Correct. But a tablet that you hold in your hand. Actually, I call them a phablet because a lot of them are a phone tablet.
Yes. Is that a term? Not really, no. But it's a good thought. So tablets have probably the inception of tablets was maybe 5 or so years ago when we had the smartphones come onto the market, and we probably needed a larger device given that the applications were going to streaming content Netflix and these sorts of things. We wanted
a screen that you could actually see.
Yeah, absolutely. Rather than holding your 5-inch phone or 3.5-inch phone. So we went to a tablet and we found that the market was wanting something like that. So, they've been really successful. And, you know, there's no real common myths about them. They can do all sorts of wonderful things.
Is
now.
It a replacement for a laptop?
We believe it is, absolutely. I think there's all that repository of information can go on the cloud now. So our people talk about the cloud, and we talk about storage in USBs and all these other types of storage. So the laptops have become a little bit redundant, and I think people like the how you view the screen, and it's lighter
and it's portable
and you don't have to start it up, and the battery lasts a long time and all those sorts of things. So it's become a necessity for most people, I think.
But it is app-based technology. The conventional programming way of old has gone.
Yeah, so some of the operating systems are app-based, and the others, so you can get Microsoft products as well on tablets
now
as well.
So you can still get Word or Excel or something
absolutely.
Like that if you wanted to do a little bit of work on them.
For sure. So you can use all those usual applications that you would on a laptop, on a tablet now.
What are the cameras like?
Cameras are very good. So if you've used Skype or Viber or Messenger, you can make video calls on those devices now. So it keeps people in touch with their loved ones overseas, and so the camera quality on the tablets is quite good.
No, I've never used it. Have you ever tried the apps that you type in the words in, say, can you tell me the way to the train station, and seen them translate into Japanese or...
I've seen it in Chinese.
Oh, have you?
Yes.
Does your husband use it?
My husband uses it.
Oh, right. Does it work for him?
Yes, it does work for him. So far, he hasn't been, you know, mortally... wounded because he said the wrong thing incorrectly or anything. Yeah. But he has used it and does use it, I think, quite regularly when he's going to a hotel or something like that. So I can imagine if you were to have one of these tablets on holiday.
Yeah. I think the thing for us is we're noticing that our demographic seems to be using it for a lot more than just holidays now. So it can be booking holidays and doing all the things that a travel agent might do or a real estate agent might do. You can actually look online with these devices now, and you know, our customer base is getting very savvy with it as well.
Do seniors like them?
They, while they're scared of them at the start, I think with the tutorials and things that we do at the stores, we get them up to speed pretty quickly. Maps is another one which is used heavily.
And navigation as well too.
Maps, navigation, booking taxis online, all these sorts of things that we weren't engaged in before, we're engaged with now with tablets.
We use it for Netflix to send to the television via the Wi-Fi. Oh, it hurts.
Correct.
Trying to work all that out. Oh, it really does. So battery power would be another issue. How long do they last? They last more than
most of them
8 hours?
Yeah, most of them would last more than 8 hours, so a lot longer than a conventional laptop.
Yeah.
So you're probably looking at between 8 and 12 hours. And that's, it's streaming Netflix and, you know, movies and all those sorts of applications are heavily used.
Is my tablet, if I'm going down the tablet route, is that different to a phone? Have I got access if I wanted to call someone with it? Or is it more that I'm doing things on my tablet versus then using my phone for
making a phone call? Apart from the size, Vicky, They have the capability to transmit both voice and data.
Right.
So typically a tablet will only do data, but now they do voice and data like a phone would. So there are select models that have that.
So
function.
It is like a phone as well?
Correct. Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yep.
And if I was going overseas, can I just pop the SIM card out and put an international one in, or use a Telstra roaming data service only?
You sure can. So you can have either of those options. Probably the most popular one is to get a local SIM card to where you're going. It just limits the cost a little bit.
So do they lock pads?
No, they don't.
Oh, right. Okay,
they don't. Right, yeah. So, you know, you have that advantage of, of using it overseas as well.
Well, there we go. It seems to me like... Tablets.
I like the idea because then you can watch your little show or your music or whatever and, you know, just...
And every old person needs to take their tablets and their pads.
That's right. They do. They do, Brody.
Yes, well, I'm not there yet. Tablets, maybe. Chris, it's been fantastic to have you in here again. Look forward to seeing you in the next time. We'll look at... Actually, I think we would like to discuss, and that's the cloud.
The cloud, absolutely.
The cloud would be a really interesting tale. Yes. Now, we're going to have a bit of a change here because we're going to run Noel towards the end. So, we're now going to play a piece of music.
Right.
So, can you give me your...
We've got the last of our 70s moment, and this is Casey and the Sunshine Band. That's the way I like it. And we're back at the age stage.
We are.
Brody, you have spoken with Noel recently about... hybrids and electric cars.
I have. I did an interview with him earlier on today.
Right.
And he was very informative, really informative. So he's, I didn't realise there were so many variants in the automotive sector, but there are. And it's not just an electric or hybrid. It's that there are some that charge the batteries and some that charge the engine and some that does something else.
So it's a way of the future, we'll find out.
It's coming, yep.
Well, that's good.
So without further ado, let's listen to Noel.
Yes.
And welcome to the A-Stage, our old mate, the guy who knows everything to do with four wheels, Master Noel Watson. How are you today, buddy?
I'm very well, Brody. Nice to speak with you again.
Now, today's subject, we want to be able to talk about the issue of buying green cars, or what green and cars. That's not things, two words that you put together naturally, but you've been looking into the subject matter for me.
Yeah, I have indeed. It's fascinating, really. I mean, it's something, it's a bit of a conundrum. We want to spend less money at the servo, but at the same time, the cost of purchasing cars is rising and possibly faster than the roller coaster than we are on with fuel prices at the moment. So it is somewhat of a conundrum. I mean, like, there's also a social thing about, you know, we all want to look after the planet as best we can. And some of us are cycling and, you know, walking a bit further than we used to. So there's a bit of a switch to thinking of cars that are more efficient, which is great. And then it comes to the next part of the equation is, do we choose hybrids? Do we choose electric cars? Do we choose diesel cars? Do we look at LPG cars? So there's a few topics we can touch on today.
Sure. The first step one assumes, other than the obvious, like using diesel and the like, is to move straight into hybrid, because we'd have to accept the fact that all standard petrol and diesel engine cars are going to get steadily and progressively better mileage year on, year out. So let's assume that's going to be a given. So if we're going to make a leap, we actually then have to make a leap and look at what the next level is, and that surely is hybrid, isn't it?
Yeah, and also, but we need to understand that there's four types of hybrids. I mean, I don't think that's common knowledge. I mean, there's the power split or the series parallel hybrid, which is, you know, the Prius, the Camry use. Then there's the parallel hybrid, which is the electric engine that assists the petrol engine, like Honda developed. And then there's the series hybrid, which mostly runs on battery, and the petrol engine recharges the battery, i.e. the whole Volt. That's the only one that I know of. I mean, there may be others, but that's the only one that I'm aware of. And then, of course, we go to plug-ins, and you know, which draws powers from the power grid. And that's not common in Oz at the moment, but it all depends on the owner drawing power from the grid. And you've kind of got to ask yourself the question, how green are they at this point in time? So, yeah, there's four things that we need to consider. But just on the point of electric cars, you know, they are slow to take up in Oz at the moment. They are more expensive. The fuel, there's a bit of fuel tank, if I can call it fuel tank, fuel reserve, energy anxiety at this point in time, and there's few recharge stations, and the cost of replacing the batteries, I believe, from my research, is quite considerable. And I mean, we don't want the car's battery to expire before our pacemakers do, that's for sure.
No, and I've also heard by a little sidetrack that if an electric car is involved in an accident, it's very difficult for the people to suddenly just go in and extract people, because it could be live and there could be a lot of sparky type stuff around. So,
yeah, there's a whole lot of training issues around that with recovery vehicles and SES and all sorts of emergency services. So, yeah, that's something that we need to come to grips with as a country.
Who makes an electric car in Australia? Does Nissan make one?
Look, I think
they have the Leaf, don't they? Wasn't it called the Leaf?
Yeah, look, there's a couple of choices that you would want to look at. And I think that the people leading the way are Toyota, Honda, and Nissan are certainly jumping on board with that now.
Well, we've got Tesla at the high end.
Yeah, exactly, which is a beautiful thing, but expensive. And there's a solar development going on as well. So there's a whole bunch. I don't particularly want to nail one manufacturer, but the Toyota and the Hondas are certainly leading the way in that area, as I see it at the moment.
What about fuel consumption in hybrid cars? Is that...
Yeah, well, that's another one. I mean, like, I suppose if you go to your accountant and you say, look, I'm going to spend X amount of dollars on a hybrid car, I think his immediate answer would be, you know, if you're comparing, say, a hybrid Prius with a Camry, from memory, the highway, city highway cycle of a Prius is around about 3.9 litres per 100 kilometres versus a Camry, which is around about 7.8. Similarly, a Honda Civic uses around about 4.4, compared to the non-hybrid Honda Civic, which is about 6.9. So
we will talk about that next week, because we have unfortunately run out of time. Next time we might have a look in hybrid car management.
That would be a fascinating topic. Well, I look forward to seeing you then.
Okay. Thanks very much. Bye. So that was Noel. What did you think?
Well, very interesting as always.
Yeah, very always. Useful. As all our guests have been today, haven't they?
They have been. It's been a pleasure. It's always a pleasure to have all our guests here.
Well, it's been a great program, because we've migrated straight through the process with a common theme, I thought we did today.
We've done well.
We have. Are you coming next week, or are we going?
I'll be here.
Oh, wonderful.
I try to be here when I can, Brody, just to see your smiling face.
Oh, listen to her. Well, that was that's very kind of you.
And we've got a few people back next week. We've got Samantha Dickerson.
Oh, yes. Oh, back. Wonderful.
So
I love Sam.
She'll be back next week.
She's talking about funerals and things.
Yes. And Adam's back talking about travel.
Oh, yeah. Yes, he is. Adam is. Yes, he is.
Yes.
He's been at a conference, so he'll be back to give us a little squirt of information.
Yep. And then Tom and Stuart will be back in the hot seat.
Well, Stuart may not be.
Oh, Stuart may still be away.
Yeah.
But that's okay. Well, we might have Kim back again.
We could.
She's a wealth of information.
She absolutely is.
And of course, Tricia, we hope we'll be back with some more financial advice as well.
Terrific. All right. So on that, why don't we bid farewell?
Okay, Brody.
Lovely to see you.
See you next week.
Bye. Across the Peninsula, 98.7, 98.3, RPPFM.